think what I learned in the time is like that actually failing and doing something wrong is better than not doing it, because you fail and you learn and you move on and you find maybe you fix it and the next time you know how to do it.
Welcome. You're listening to More Right Than Wrong, a podcast where we explore opposing tensions in the workplace. And with the help of a guest in every episode, we try to figure out how to make decisions that are more right than wrong. Today, we're speaking with the lovely Alex Proba about taking risks versus playing it safe, which is particularly challenging for me. So I found her conversation super inspiring and so helpful to address questions like, how can we know when a risk is actually even worth taking? When should you play it safe? And when do you prioritize financial or emotional comfort? So Angie, tell us how you met Alex.
So Alex and I go way back. We worked at General Assembly together, and then she went on to design leadership roles at Kickstarter, Nike, Mother New York. And in 2013, she finally left the safety of corporate life to strike out on her own and start Studio Proba, which has been like phenomenal in terms of its growth. Her clients, you might have heard a few of them. It's like Lululemon, Google, Nike.
Oh, no, I don't know. She also,
no, we've never heard of this. But she also has been in like Vogue Italia. She did a partnership with Louis Vuitton. So, I mean, it's a pretty cool roster of clients and kind of collaborations. So Alex immediately came to mind as the perfect guest for this topic, because not only does she have great experiences, but she's like wonderfully candid, tells it as it is, and then she also tells really hilarious stories.
Yeah.
So sit back, enjoy yourself. It's going to be a really great conversation. Alex, thank you for joining today. Perhaps we can start by having you just tell us a little bit about Studio Proba and how it came to be.
Yeah, it's a really long journey, almost 10 years ago when I started it. And it kind of started when I was like at the kind of crossroads of just like, you know, having full-time jobs, but also wanting to do more like with my own creativity and like kind of discover who I am as like a designer and artist. And I think I, at that point, had no clue who I am. So I started out of just fun, actually, and boredom. I started this project in 2013 where I did a poster every day with like 20 followers on Instagram just to like keep me accountable of like posting it and doing it and kind of losing like the fear of sharing work, because that's a big one too of in design, especially when you're like a young designer, like you always question what you do and you can move around pixels and never be happy and you kind of don't want to post it because you don't want to be judged. And it was like the early days, obviously, of Instagram, and it probably got worse in time. But that was kind of the thing that I started. And I did like a poster every day, every night for 30 minutes. That was like kind of my goal. It was like 30 minutes, and whatever I produce in 30 minutes is going to go out there in the world and people are going to see it and hate it or like it or whatever it is. But I'm going to be fine with that. A lot of designers in the past have done it. I didn't come up with that idea or anything, which was something to keep me accountable so I can try to like find what I want to do or who I am. And I think that project weirdly blew up around the 100 sight unseen were the first ones that like wrote about it. And then once that picked up, like more press came, and then I was like, oh God, now it's a thing. Now I can't just stop and quit. And so in the end, I did it for 4 years straight. In those 4 years though, I did other projects. I launched a furniture collection with Bauer Studios in New York, and I did murals and I did other things because I think I out of nowhere had an audience to do things. And so I kind of like that poster day project has led me to like have an audience and try things out and produce things and make things that I always wanted to make but never had the courage to make. And then it just like all like happened from there and spiraled into like a home line from rugs and pillows and towels and candles, which is now Proba Home. But with Studio Proba, I still do like a lot of just like branding work, classic like art direction, as well as installation projects and interior projects and murals and sculptures and all that. So I think I just do everything at this point.
I think, wait, doing some quick math in my head, 4 years every day, that's like 1,500 projects.
It's 1,460 posters, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty prolific creative clip. How did you maintain the momentum in all that?
I think it was weird because like around the 80 even, I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, what am I doing? Like, it's like, you know, so I think it had like no meaning to me at that point because it was just like me doing something. And it kind of was hard because, you know, you work, you want to have dinner with friends after work sometimes. And I would be like rushing home to like hit midnight to like post something and not have it overlap in the next day. And so it was like super stressful. But I think then when people wrote about it, you kind of like in this like, oh God, now I can't stop because that will be like, you know, you failed, like you can't do this. So it was really hard that year. But then the last 3 years, I included like my community, my followers at that point. And the second year I called it Yours so they could like tell me about their lives. And I basically visualized the stories that they sent me. That became easy just because there was someone else on the other line, right? There was like someone else waiting for their story or whatever they told me to be visualized. And I think that made it like real, kind of like it was almost like a client relationship where you have a purpose.
Like built in accountability.
Yeah. And I think with all my work that I do, even just my murals and stuff, what I really want to do is like spark joy and happiness. Like I don't want to make people sad. If I create stuff, I want to make positive things. I don't want to make things that, you know, bring you down or make you think deeper and deeper sad kind of thing. I wanted them to be more, you know, naive and uplifting and happy.
Right. I want to take a step back a little bit because you mentioned a few things. The way you talked about your journey, it almost sounded like it had a momentum on its own, like it was carrying you. Like you started doing this thing for fun and then it just sort of had a life of its own. You mentioned courage at a certain point in there about like you typically wouldn't have the courage to do this stuff. What was that experience like? What did it feel like in those 4 years? But even the stuff after, you kind of casually mentioned, oh, and then you did this partnership and that partnership. Did you have time to think about if it was scary, if it felt like you needed to like take a step forward and courage? Did it feel like you were taking risks, or what was the experience like for you?
I mean, I'm from Germany originally and moved to New York for work. So I didn't really have the luxury of being like, hey, I'm just going to do my own stuff because I needed a visa. You know, I needed a job. Like it was like never, I don't think that was really an option for me. And when I started, I was actually at General Assembly with Angie, so she knows the whole thing. But I just didn't have much choice. And so I never really asked myself, you know, if I should do it or not, because for the first years, it wasn't a thing. But I didn't also have the reason to do my own stuff because I was kind of tied to a company, but I still wanted to do stuff. And that was like heavily inspired by the time at General Assembly with Mimi and Angie and Jess, because Jess at that time, she wrote a book about entrepreneurship with her partner. And then Mimi did a lot of things at the side and everyone was just doing stuff. And so I was just like, man, what am I doing? Why am I just like, you know, working within one brand all day? So I think it was like heavily inspired and pushed also to do something definitely by Mimi and Jess. At some point though, which is a couple of years later, I self-sponsored my green card actually. So I wasn't tied to a company anymore. I got it actually via my studio because of the press that I got for that specific project. And so I was free at some point, but I still didn't have it in me to be like, hey, I'm going to just do it on my own. So I actually went to work for many other companies after that. I worked for Kickstarter in-house. I worked for Mother Design in-house. I then did a bunch of like freelance stuff for a long time, which I considered like a full-time job too, but I was at Hugo and Marie and Ronco and all that stuff. And I just had my studio running next to it. And I was fine with like investing all nights and all weekends on that. And it was working. So I had like no reason to, you know, switch. And then at some point, like after Mother, that was like 2016, I think, I was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to do this. So I decided to go on my own because murals became a really big part of my business. And that was hard with a full-time job to be like, hey, taking a week off or 2 weeks off, flying to LA to paint it. I couldn't really do those. So I canceled a lot of, or said no to a lot of projects. And so in 2016, I decided to go on my own, but that didn't last long. So I did it for 2 months and was actually happy about it. But then Nike came along and they gave me like a really good offer where I was just like, oh God, it's Nike. And I didn't really want it because I was like, took me so much strength to decide to go on my own. But then my mom was like, no, you should definitely take that job. Maybe you meet someone.
I know, moms always have that motive.
Moms are always thinking about that. They're like, grandchildren. Yeah. What about grandchildren? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, Mom, it's not a dating site. It's a job, right? Like, so I think she was like, yeah, maybe you meet someone. I was like, yeah, whatever, Mom. She's like, no, you should just do it. And they offered me a 4-day week. So I had 3 days for my studio because that I was like very clear about that. I don't want to lose that. So what happened with Nike is that A, it was like the best job probably that I ever had with the coolest projects and the biggest budgets that you can like have. Mm-hmm. And then it was also the busiest time of my studio. And then 2 months in, I actually met someone.
Your mom manifested it for you.
Yeah, he's my life partner. And that's why I'm important. But somehow we started dating at some point. But then I had long distance to Portland. Mm-hmm. I had Nike and I had Studio Proba. So I was just like, there's no way. I was like a wreck. I was just like in the plane all the time. I would go out to Portland just for a Saturday and fly back Sunday. Like, it was just a crazy time. And then I traveled so much for murals in that time too. So then I was kind of like, I need to make a decision. And so basically the decision was, for the first time in my life, I think, for my personal stuff. So I decided to give it like a shot with the long distance, have more time for that, and then my studio. And so I left Nike a year and a half in just because I couldn't handle it. It was like way too much to handle.
Right.
And and that's been like 3.5 years now, or almost 4 years though. And it has been definitely the best decision that I made. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the fear is normal, right? Like, I think we would all be in that situation. It's scary. But can you share explicitly what it was that you were afraid of happening?
Yeah, I think it was like, you have a job and you just pay your bills and you have security in that. And to make all of these products happen, like to make rugs happen, to make pillows happen, I need money for that, right? Like, because you need to like first pay for them before you can sell them. And even just prototyping or figuring them out takes like a long time, and you invest money in it. And having a job for that is great because you know that you have income coming in and you can pay your rent, you can pay your whatever mortgage, whatever you have. And I think that was one big one, is that that I was afraid that I won't make it.
But what I heard in that essentially is that it was the externalities that you were afraid of. Did you ever have fear that your creative work wouldn't be good enough?
No, I think I did before the Poster Day project, for sure. Like, I didn't want to be judged by anything. And like, yeah, I was like, I'm bad. I'm not a good designer. And who knows, maybe I'm still not. But like, I think what I learned in the time is like that actually failing and doing something wrong is better than not doing it, because you fail and you learn and you move on and you find, maybe you fix it. And the next time you know how to do it. Right. So I think from any project, like, I'm not a painter. I didn't study paint. I actually went to design school for graphic design and interior architecture, and then for furniture design. Like, I have nothing to do with painting, like, in my life. Like, it was nothing that I did. And I remember being asked for my first mural for Dropbox in New York. And I'm like, wait, 60 feet long by what? Like, I'm not sure I can do that. I had like no clue how to do it, what to do it, and how to even start. But I think those projects are what interest me the most too, is like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Like, the worst that can happen is like you paint over. It's not playing with lives here. Like, it's not, nothing really bad can happen. But from that experience, like, you learn if you fail. And I kind of did. We used the wrong paint and we had to like fix stuff. But we didn't know that. But then in the end, you just fix it, right? So I think those moments actually make you better and make you grow and like figure it out in a way. And so I think failing is actually a really important thing in life. And that's kind of what I learned with my business. And I think it looks like I'm a business of 20, because some people write me like, hey, customer service, can we help? It's all like really me. Like, I do fulfillment, I do like customer service, I do the design, and I do the painting, and I do, obviously I have like help with painting stuff when it's a mural, but it's really just like me trying to figure it out every day. And I think that a lot of things, or business things, I never knew. So I like, you know, you do fail, but I think that's the only way you move on too.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? I don't know if that mural and using the wrong paint is a good example, but when you look back at some of those scary moments that you just kind of took a step out in faith and then risked failure. Can you think back to, and would you be willing to share an instance where the failure was pretty big? But you obviously came back from it, right? But
I mean, I did something really funny at Nike. Yeah, I was doing a store design, like build out project, and it was a lot and it was super fast and everything was just kept moving. And it was like my first project there too, which is funny. I don't know, you just have to order and like approve stuff really fast. And so I was, so it's actually not really fun, like that funny, but I was just like, it was like a art, like a picture, like a photograph, like an advertising that was supposed to just like live in like the kind of like vestibule area of like the elevators. And that space is normally not that big, but I mistakenly did feet instead of inches. So like in the middle of the night, because the install goes like overnight and it's like a long day and you're 2 days stuck in the store, in the middle of the night, these people arrive with these giant boxes and frames and whatever. And so my boss at the time, he came to me and was like, "What is that? What the hell is that?" And I was like, I don't know what that is.
Oh my God.
They like unwrapped this giant billboard that doesn't even fit in the store. It was so big that like it didn't even fit in there. And I was like dying. And I was like, okay, I'm losing my job. It's my first project they trusted me on. And so everyone at that point was tired at 4 a.m., thought this was hilarious. I was like dying because I was like, oh my God.
They thought it was fun because it could go either way. 4 a.m. could be like, I'm exhausted. This is pissing me off.
My direct boss and like all the people around it thought it was funny, but I had no idea leadership or what's going to happen. And I had no idea what I actually paid for that because it was
massive. That must have been so expensive.
Right. It must have been so expensive. Like an expensive mistake.
It was like close to $100,000 mistake. It was really bad. And I was just dying. I was just like, oh my God, like I'm going to have no job. And it was 4 a.m. But the funny thing is like a couple hours later, probably 6 a.m., a coworker of mine that was like, she was in charge of like prop stuff. And she did the same mistake. She apparently approved like a table that was supposed to be smaller, but it was giant table out of mirrored glass. And they couldn't get it into the store either. So I was like, oh my God.
Were y'all like, y'all should have just said like, look, you missed the brief. We made this for giants. Like this is a large scale installation.
Like it was really funny. Amazing. So we didn't have to display in the end and we didn't have like the visuals. Oh, and we're like, oh my God. But yeah. And then later on when I went home at some point, I looked up the price sheet and like what that actually cost, and I like, almost died. But now I'm never gonna make a feet, inches, whatever mistake in my life again. Like it was
that's
bad.
Amazing.
Thank you for sharing that. That feels, and it's so funny because at the time it's not like it felt like a scary act you were doing. You were just approving. You were like, yeah, this is the right thing. Let's
frame, do sure.
Why are you bothering me with all these details? Yes. Right.
Yeah.
It sounds like you were really fortunate to be in a somewhat psychologically safe environment in the sense that you made a significant error, but
well, you weren't alone, so clearly it worked out well. So
right.
So wait, so when you look back on those kinds of mistakes, and I mean, you have a sense of humor about it now, right? It worked out okay in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on the past 4 years, has your view about risk and reward changed a lot? Has your risk tolerance improved? How have you evolved over the past 4 years then, since the beginning of this journey?
Yeah, I think now I just like ask myself always the question, like, what's the worst that can happen, right? Like when I decided for my personal life plus my studio, my parents, like my mom was like, oh my God, you can't do that. You can't go on your own, right? Like you need a job, just quit your studio kind of thing, right? I was like, yeah, mom, but what's the worst that can happen? I just need to find a new job, right? That's like literally the worst thing that can happen. Like if it doesn't work out with my studio, like I will have to find a new job and that's okay, right? And it's not the end of the world. And so I think that's kind of what I ask myself with any decision. Like I'm a homeowner now, which I thought I'm never going to be. And I don't even know if we're going to be in Portland for how long or whatever. And it was right before COVID, we bought a home together. And I was like, oh my God, but what if I don't want to be in Portland anymore? And Ian was like, well, then we sell the house. And I was like, oh yeah, that's my option, right? Even with new projects and investing money into projects, my thing is like, always like, what's my threshold of like how much funding or how much can I put towards this without like really suffering from it, right? So let's say I'm going to design 20 couches now, like, and no one will buy it. And I'm going to sit on all the couches. Like, what's my worst case scenario? Like, what can I kind of like cover? That's kind of how I do every project, is like, what's the worst that can happen? And then what's my threshold? Like, what can I, you know, cover myself that doesn't ruin me or whatever it is, right? So I think that's kind of how I do anything in life, I guess.
I love that framework. But then on the flip side, how do you imagine the upside, the wins? Do you think, okay, but if I do this, I could be a billionaire? Or you're like, or I won't fail. Like, talk a little bit through like what your upside looks like when you're rationalizing it.
I don't think I'm the businesswoman that is like, oh my God, let's make money and dig gold out of the ground. Like, that's kind of not who I am, and maybe I should be. But I think with all my products, even like for Proba Home, like everything is handmade, everything is like low quantities and higher end pricing for me already. Like, I could go to China if I wanted to, right? Like, I could do this mass thing, but then I'm not staying like kind of true to my values or who I want to be as a business. And I probably could take it into like a bigger space if I wanted to, but I think that's not necessarily my goal. I think my goal is just like, I'm happy with what I'm doing, right? I love doing what I do, and I kind of want to share that with, you know, my community as well. And I think that's like the joy part out of it, is like what makes it worthwhile for me, you know?
So, Alex, we have this joke on this podcast that these are my therapy sessions. And the timing of this topic couldn't be more perfect. So I started a branding and design agency about a year and a half ago. We're at a really pivotal time of growth right now, and it's growing at a clip that I'd never planned personally. It feels like it has a momentum of its own. And then I'm just at these key junctures where I have to react and respond to it. And literally, a close friend of mine is supposed to send me a risk methodology because I'm trying to figure out some risk trade-offs of some key growth decisions that I have to make. And so I'm just carefully kind of listening. You have this way of talking about your career and your studio almost in a, obviously you felt things in the moment. Like you said, you thought you were going to die and like you were going to lose your job. So that makes me feel more human. But you do seem to have this sort of almost like very rational approach and very optimistic. Like there's like, you know, there's surprises and there are opportunities and let yourself be delighted and that sort of thing. I would love it if you feel comfortable. Can you share a time where you like, especially in the last 4 years and owning your own company and especially having product lines, right? Mm-hmm. Can you think back to a key decision or juncture that felt the scariest, like the biggest risk, and just share what that was like for you?
Mm-hmm. What I realized coming, and I'm coming obviously from the brand side myself, like working like in branding agencies or studios on brands in-house, whatever, for the longest time. And what I didn't realize when Studio Proba happened and then also Proba Home happened and all my other sub-brands happened that I have, I didn't realize ever, I think, that it's my brand. And I think at some point it hit me when people would copy it or stores, you know, would copy it and stuff like that. And I think the hardest part for me is like to protect my brand and like to protect my work. And I think it's really a tough one because it's abstract work. You know, I don't own the colors. I don't own the shape. I didn't invent shapes. Right. And I think my work at this point is very recognizable as me. And I think when I started in that realm, it was very, very young still. And I feel like now you look at Pinterest or you look at anything, there's like so much of that, right? So yeah. I think the hardest part for me was like at some point, like when I had to deal with infringement law and all that stuff, like just to protect like kind of like my existence almost, right? It's like that's all I have right now is like my brand, that's like my livelihood, and I work really hard for it. But like I think that's the world we live in right now, and I think I spent so much time and like trying to protect it. And in the end, it doesn't work. There's not much you can protect, right? So realizing that, I was like in a really bad time last year about a lot of those things. And just like from like small makers, you know, like that just starting out, they just take your stuff and make it and then sell it as their own, or big companies and corporations, which I think is even worse, right? I think both are equally bad, because I want the new starting out makers to make their own stuff and have their own vision.
Sure.
And like, you know, yeah. So I don't want them to just go into Pinterest and copy stuff. But that's the time we live in now. It's like so easy to do that. There's just nothing I can do. And I think I had to, like, in the last year, just learn not to care, I guess.
Yeah. Oh my God, that comes up all the time. The importance of caring less in order to kind of navigate this complicated world.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to remark that, you know, I've known you for a silly long time, actually, when we think about it. And it never occurred to me, because you often present yourself as being risk averse, that there is a quiet confidence and bravery and just being open to opportunities as they present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a world in which you could have said, no, even if there is an interest in doing a mural, I could have been like, no, I don't know how to do that. I don't do that, mm-hmm. right? I don't do all these other things. And what I just want to call out and just really just recognize is that, like, sometimes your narrative is about the things that you're afraid of doing. But I just want to also just celebrate the fact that you've been so incredibly brave and being open to twists and turns in the path, which has made you an amazing, I mean, you were always an amazing human, but even more so with Studio Proba, like the successes are very much built upon that courage.
Thank you. Yeah. It's funny. It just looks easy behind the scenes a lot. Like, I get a lot of emails from people and they're like, hey, just quit my job in the ad agency. And now what? I'm like, what? Like, I just never quit. Like, I didn't do that. Like, I never said that. But that I talk to them and I'm like, hey, do you have a portfolio? Do you have other job, like, things to show? Like, you know, and they never do. And I'm just like, I don't know how to, like, advise that, because mm-hmm. like, I'm not advertising here, like, go quit your job and become instantly successful with your work. And I think that a lot of people forget that with me, like, yeah, next year my studio is like 10 years old, right? Like, and I think
wow,
that's, like, very cool.
It's a long time happening, and I think it didn't happen overnight, even though it might seem that way. But for the longest time, like, I didn't have a life. I, like, had a job and another job, and that's kind of what I was doing for, like, the longest time, until, you know, now I actually do have a life and a job. But, like, I didn't have that. And that was, like, a conscious choice, though, to, you know, because I also love what I do. I think that helps, right? Like, if you don't love it, then it's a hard time having two jobs. But yeah.
You know, it's funny, Angie, what you just said made me think, oftentimes what happens, Alex, on these episodes or these conversations, we come in with a theme and then we realize, oh, maybe those two polarities, the way we're describing them, aren't the right words for the spectrum. And rather than it being like a risk versus security, perhaps it's like risk versus opportunity. And I see that when you look back and writing your story, was it a story about risk? But maybe actually it was more of a story about opportunity, and that you just kind of always were willing to walk through that door, and the opportunities guided you. So it's not like you know, quit your job and forced things, but more just kept walking through these doors of opportunity. And so then it builds on itself. And I really resonate with that. I think that's where that momentum, and that was such a cool thing to hear you talk about the story, because it sounded like it had a life of its own that you were just kind of almost stewarding, like that you were just kind of willing to go with it.
Yeah. And to that point too, like, I never had a business plan. And it's funny because I have a CPA who helps me with a lot of stuff, because obviously being German and like all these tax stuff, but he always asked me, like, hey, you know, prognosis for the next year, like, what's that? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I have no clue what to tell you.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And he always like laughs about it. And I'm just like, I don't have a plan. I don't know what's going to come. And I just am actually launching a new line in the fall, but it's for pets, but it's Proba Paws. So it's
so
all
fun.
Like,
oh my gosh, I cannot wait.
Oh my gosh, cannot wait.
So, but that wasn't planned either. And it doesn't have a business plan either. I just like, cool, Proba Paws, cute, fits in my whole, like,
that's
I got lucky with my last name too, I think.
Love a good alliteration.
Yeah, so I can keep
Run
adding
it.
To it. And, and there's no plan. I just go.
So really, the final question we love asking is, when you look back at your professional career, what's something that you feel like you have done more right than wrong?
Yeah, I think it's probably two answers for that. But I think always kind of like listen deep down to I think your inner voice, and sometimes they're not logic, growing up with like doctor parents, and like in my head I always had to become a doctor, and that was like in my head but definitely not in my heart. And a big part of that is also my grandma, which I haven't mentioned, but she's a big, probably the biggest inspiration in my life in terms of color and creativity, just because she was the only one that was around me that had that. And she used to be a florist back in the day and then gave up kind of her career to raise my brother and I. And I think she just spent like a lot of time with us, just like in the garden, in the kitchen, and just doing more creative things that I was known to do at home with my parents. And I think that's
so cool.
Something that probably is my heart. And then my parents were my mind, and I listened to my mind for the longest time, and then just to be safe. But then at some point I was like, nope, that's not me. Do I really want to be that my whole life? So I started listening to myself, and I guess to my grandma and my heart, and chose like the right path for me. And it might have not worked out, but it would still be the right path because that's like what I wanted, right? And even if it doesn't work out, it doesn't mean that was wrong. It just, you know, didn't work out, and you have to pivot and go somewhere else. And I think that's the whole lesson that I said before with failing, that people are so afraid of failing, but it actually is the only way like forward, because if you don't fail, it means you don't try. So therefore you can't go anywhere, right? So I think that's kind of like a summary of the two.
Yeah, love that. Thank you. That's kind of exactly what I needed to hear. And I resonate so much with the things that you said. And honestly, one of the things that I think you can tell your parents, like, immigrants are the biggest risk takers. Your parents, it's like in your DNA. I mean, the risk that they took to give you and your brother a better life. I mean, I always kind of, that's the way I think about my parents, where I'm like, whatever, you've modeled risk-taking your entire life. So I'm just a product of you.
That's what I keep saying too. And it's like, sometimes when I complain about something, my partner will be like, yeah, but look at your parents. Look what they did. Like, you don't have totally. Like, you don't have a hard life. I was like, yeah, I don't. Like, but I think in my parents' mentality is like, because they had to take so many risks and everything was so hard for them, they don't want us to have that, right? They
for
don't
sure.
want us to take risks or have a hard life. So I think that's why
and it's
they're
like,
having
we
like
don't. A, we have a computer in our pocket.
We don't.
We're totally fine.
Well, thanks for taking the time.
This is so inspiring, Alex.
It's been so great chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
So that was super fun. It's so funny that I've known Alex for so long, and yet I still learned new things in talking to her in this conversation. So, Rachel, what did you take away?
She has this like very even-keeled, cool cat vibe about her. I loved how plain-spoken and sort of matter-of-fact she was, in a way that she reinforced these concepts about risk-taking that seem like so obvious and almost standard, but then it's always such a good reminder. Like, she seemed to talk about her failures as if they're just like mundane everyday thing. Like, they weren't even big events. Like, she just kind of was like, yeah, that didn't work out.
Yeah, there was one giant poster mistake, but besides that, but like, it was like, I learned from it and she moved on.
Well, yeah. But when she looks back, she just talked about failing as the only way forward. Like, it was very liberating. She talked about risk in a way that was sort of about just like letting go and like seeing it as just like, yeah, you just got to embrace it.
Yeah, I love that. What was also really fun is, you know, I've known her for so long and I've personally seen her from the sidelines as she was continuing this journey. But for someone who is looking in at Studio Prova and saying, oh my God, it seemed like from day one, they were killing it, right? Like, she had this amazing client list. She was getting so much media and like doing this like Louis Vuitton. But like hearing her talk about how the beginning was slow, right? That she started afraid and she was doing these posters every day and then it built up over time. So like, it's so common that people will rewrite the narrative once they've achieved success. Like they'll kind
totally.
Of say, oh yeah, I knew what I was doing. I was following my passion. Yeah. I was following my bliss.
You cut out all the shitty parts.
Yeah, but she was super honest about it. Like, I had to go home and do a poster after having dinner and drinks. I needed to hit it before the midnight deadline. Like, I just loved how candid she was about it, which is, can be inspirational to all of us because it's so easy in the world of social media to be like, well, they're successful. They must have done it overnight. But really, it was a painful, hard, scary experience.
Yeah.
I don't think she would ever describe herself as a top five adjective as being brave, but I do think she's incredibly brave, and it's so deeply ingrained in who she is that she doesn't even think of it as an action. She just makes a decision that she wants to make.
Totally. There was sort of a lightness in the, in like a sense of play and a sense of like, I'm still around. It's going to be fine. Like, even when she talked about even like her fear around like, what if we don't want to live in this house in 5 years? And it was like, oh, we'll just sell it. You know, I'm exactly the same way where I like taking calculated risks and I really want to optimize. But it's also when you do that too much, you prevent growth and you miss opportunity.
It's so interesting that you, in your head, you're
I think that.
Yeah, because like I, from the outside, think of like all the, like what seems to me being like, she wants to do this and I'm going to do it. Like more impulsive things. What's often really a good reminder for all of us is that our actions outwardly can be interpreted differently than our brain is processing them or intending them. And that's something that's often a good reminder in that, like, you know, there are often times when you feel like maybe you're insecure and you're like, everyone's noticing this. And you're like, no one's noticing this. No one's paying attention.
Right.
You know? And so again, it's just a good reminder that like, however long you can sit there and internally process, it does not necessarily reflect the way that others will see you or your actions or your work. So.
Right. It is such a relative thing. Like you said, like what feels familiar to me doesn't feel like risk taking. So it's relative risk for everyone, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It was awesome.
Do you feel like you'll do anything differently in the way that you approach risk based on that chat?
I mean, I tend to be pretty decisive.
Yeah, I love that about you.
But I always love hearing how other people process to get to that decision, which is what I think we were talking a lot about. How about you?
Mm-hmm. I have to say, coming right out of that conversation, I felt like, oh, I'll just try stuff. Like, it's okay. Mm, it's okay if it doesn't
work. That's great.
Like, I just was like, yeah, it might work out badly, but at least I'll learn from it. And just trying to be lighter about the mistakes.
Yeah. I will say it is very, throughout the course of my career, there have been very few instances where a decision couldn't be undone, right? Like, it might just be a little more annoying, but it's very rare that, you know, I'm making, in my career, I'm never making a life or death situation, like a choice. So to that end, it frees you from having to have the weight of complicated decision-making, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. It's been super fun and can't wait to have Alex back in the future. Follow us on social and be sure to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.